So welcome, and thank you for joining us this morning. I'm David Glasgow, the Associate Deputy Administrator for the National Organic Program at USDA, and I'm going to provide a brief update on other work at NOP, and then Allison Wallet of MOSA will go into some details on the transition to organic partnership program. It worked. I feel pretty confident that you're aware of the importance. Wrong slide. Hang on. Let's see. I think they're just a different order, but that's fine. We'll work with that. Except the one I was going to use, I didn't seem to put into this one. Okay. I'm just going to say the words anyway. So this is a map. Imagine a map of the U.S., shaded, each state shaded according to how many certified operations are in that state. And imagine California is definitely the darkest with more than 5,000 certified operations. But imagine this region as being solidly dark green, because I'm pretty confident that you're aware of the importance of this region in the organic world. The states represented at this conference make up a sizable portion of the organic operations certified in the U.S. I know there are many crops important to the region, but dairy, grains, and oil seeds are particularly significant, impacting a lot of jobs, families, and their communities. As you know, NOP is the oversight and enforcement arm of organic support at USDA, and we have many partners across the department supporting organic farms through technical support, research, and financial support for conservation and climate smart programs. To a new investment to make crop insurance work more for more organic farmers, and certification cost share and supply chain resiliency. Another big investment was recently announced by our undersecretary with two more initiatives to strengthen support specifically for dairy operators. In addition to offering a second round of payments through the Pandemic Market Volatility Assistance Program, USDA has created a new Organic Dairy Marketing Assistance Program, and they're also working with state leaders through the new Dairy Business Centers. I'm not the expert on dairy, but if you have questions, our team at the booth will help connect you with the people at USDA who are the experts in our dairy program. Now, let's see, successes, yes. Organic is a vital part of the U.S. food system, and the Strengthening Organic Enforcement Final Rule is part of our continuous improvement of the organic standards to meet the growing complexity of organic supply chains. And that's just the tip of the iceberg for the last 12 months. In addition to SOE, we also completed the Origin of Livestock Final Rule, and we're near the end of the implementation period. It's coming up next month, which is a week away. We're reviewing public input on inert ingredients to draft a proposed rule, and we're working on the Organic Livestock and Poultry Systems Final Rule, along with multiple national list rules that are in process. We've had some major public successes working with the Department of Justice on criminal cases in three states. We've rolled out new training on many advanced topics in the Organic Integrity Learning Center. We've tested improvements to the Organic Integrity Database and began publishing new tools to build the skilled organic workforce needed to support our growing market. We completed the transition of the remaining operations in India to direct oversight, USDA oversight. And we continue to follow developments in grain and oilseed imports from West Africa, the Black Sea region, and South America. And we launched a $300 million world-class investment in organic transition. This has been a really big year for the organic community, and there's a lot more coming. NOP is a bit different from a lot of other federal agencies in that our team here is passionate about organic specifically. We are farmers, inspectors, enforcers, advocates, and consumers. Strong community support over many years resulted in a big increase in the resources for oversight and enforcement, taking our budget from $9 million 5 years ago to $22 million this year. A few years ago, we had 34 staff who had to cover rulemaking, accreditation, international cooperation, and investigation and enforcement against fraud. Now, with increased funding, we've been able to expand the team, you can see here, and bring in experience and perspectives from the private sector, Customs and Border Patrol Protection, Customs and Border Protection, the Animal Plant Health Inspection Service, and the Foreign Ag Service. These diverse skill sets are a tremendous asset for the program to have in-house. Over the last several years, we've also talked about the many hands supporting organic enforcement. As organic certification matures and supply chains grow increasingly sophisticated around the world, so does cooperation among our equivalence partners, creating more transparency across the system and making it harder for fraud to go undetected. Ongoing training and information sharing with our law enforcement partners is also raising the risk and the cost for those who try to commit fraud in the U.S. organic market. We've also registered the USDA organic label with federal trademark authorities. The label has always been protected under federal law. This change adds additional civil remedies, such as injunctive relief and monetary damage under the Lanham Act. But most importantly, operations trafficking in counterfeit organic goods or otherwise willfully misusing the USDA organic seal may now also be subject to fines and imprisonment under the Trademark Counterfeiting Act. Customs and Border Patrol Protection can now detain, reject, or re-export imported products confirmed to be fraudulently using the organic seal. That's a much quicker process and a much stiffer penalty than what we can do under our statute with civil penalties and removing somebody from the organic certification. Success also brings new challenges and opportunities. We're working closely with certifiers to increase information sharing and transparency. We're delivering advanced training to increase consistency, and we've already started training on the many changes coming as a result of SOE. For several years now, we've been developing analytical tools that help us target resources where there's the most risk in the market. Domestically, we've grown the ongoing livestock surveillance project to cover all livestock and use it to increase consistency in the way the rules are applied by certifiers across the country. Internationally, we've been doing some sophisticated analysis of data to identify areas of concern where we need to focus enforcement resources, typically where high volume and high value crops are entering the U.S. market. Certifiers have been good partners when we have needed boots on the ground, but this quarter, we'll take this to the next level by conducting our own accreditation surveillance targeted at the country level. We're starting in India, where we will establish a process for conducting this kind of on-the-ground targeted surveillance in high-risk countries or regions. Phase one will take place in March, with two audit teams conducting on-site activities, and another audit team will conduct a remote material input review of certifier oversight and of their operations in organic soybean production and handling. Audit activities will include residue sampling and short notice or unannounced visits to certified operations. The first outcome of phase one is to determine compliance of certifiers and their operations, which will then lay the groundwork for follow-up audits and enforcement activities in phase two later in the year. This visible work reinforces the message that we are engaged and we're now able to commit oversight resources anywhere in the world. Hopefully everyone here does know about SOE, is now a final rule, and that we are in the implementation period already. If you haven't already, I encourage you to start reading the rule for the impacts it will have on your operation and those of your co-ops or friends. Everyone needs to be familiar with the new requirements, processes, and procedures. We had the first public webinar on Tuesday, and this was the first time we've ever run out of room in a Zoom meeting with over 1,000 people from all time zones around the world. So we know there's a lot of interest. Those slides are available online, and we have already started training for certifiers and inspectors on SOE. There will be more resources coming to help you and your certifier in the coming months, and it's important to remember that other provisions in the regulations remain just as important as ever, and they will continue to be enforced. Over the last several years, NOP has grown in size, capacity, and capability. We're doing things now that we never thought were possible a couple of years ago. We're monitoring shipments on the water, sending investigators to operations, and working with other U.S. law enforcement agencies to raise the cost of committing organic fraud. We're working with certifiers so they are prepared to receive more requests for information, directives, and other communications, and they will be asked to communicate more with each other across the supply chain. All these actions help ensure the integrity of organic products. This rule is long because it was built over time by many people with many perspectives. It implements recommendations from the 2018 Farm Bill, from the National Organic Standards Board, and codifies NOP guidance. It is a strong rule because of that, so thank you to everyone here who participated in getting this across the finish line. And a lot more businesses in the supply chain now need to be certified, which increases transparency for oversight and increases confidence for buyers and sellers. Under SOE, everyone is responsible for looking at their partners up and down the supply chain. There will still be limited exemptions where risk and impact are lower, and even if an exemption might apply, many will be motivated to get certified so they don't lose business. An example would be if an uncertified handler is uncertified because they only deal with sealed product that they're passing on, but one of those sealed crates comes open, that product can no longer be sold as certified organic under SOE. The most important takeaway today is to start now. Read the rule, ask questions, and start working on your plan to be in compliance before this time next year. There's a lot of work ahead as we work together to implement SOE. As I mentioned, we've already started training for certifiers, and the first informational public webinar was earlier this week. Watch the USDA Organic Insider for announcements about other resources, including new and updated modules in the Organic Integrity Learning Center, updates to the handbook, and training and other training in the coming months. It benefits the organic sector to have as many businesses certified as possible along the supply chain. There are many business benefits for being certified, and more buyers expect it for those they do business with. The organic community will be best positioned to protect the organic, to protect organic trade and the organic consumer when everyone in the supply chain is certified and we can connect every dot along the supply chain. Another big change this year is implementation of the Organic Transition Initiative. $300 million is being invested in resources and systems to support the transition to organic production, increase the use of climate smart methods, and strengthen organic supply chains. $100 million will fund the transition to organic partnership program, TOP, and it's a five-year project that is already building a robust network of sustainable farmer-to-farmer resources. A key goal is to seek out new voices and underserved communities so that organic is truly an option for everyone. MOSA is the Midwest regional lead, and we thank OFARM and Marble Seed both for joining the partnership already. Allison will talk more in depth about the program, but I do want to mention one aspect of TOP that hasn't gotten a lot of attention yet. Yep, I got behind one. The recognition of transitional status will impact everyone. It's important to remember that transitional status is not a regulatory or labeling category under the NOP regulations. TOP does not change that, but it does require us to develop a structured way of engaging with transitional operations to grow the market and demonstrate the benefits of this historic investment. Transitional status will become available, an available option in the Organic Integrity Database this spring. So we're working with certifiers now to determine the criteria for operations to be considered eligible. Two examples of how this might happen is it could be something like reviewed by the certifier, or It could involve a common organic systems plan to document adoption of practices, allowed materials and inputs. Some anticipated benefits of a potential common OSP include having an early mechanism for operations to learn organic rules and implement compliant systems, practices, and record keeping, helping detect potential non-compliances early, which may prevent disappointment related to use of a prohibited substance, enabling streamlined reporting to other USDA agencies that support organic production, including the Farm Service Agency, risk management, and conservation programs, as well as some state climate programs that are already underway. And it can lower the cost of changing certifiers if a certifier is no longer able to provide services. Oops. So I will be around, as I mentioned, afterwards to take questions. I'll be in the room and we'll be at the booth later. Before I hand over the mic, I want to thank you for your role in the many successes that we've seen in recent years and for your continued work and support as we take the next steps to continually support and strengthen farmer and consumer confidence in the USDA organic label. With that, I'm going to turn the floor over to Allison Wallen, the program director for the Midwest Top Regional Center. So Allison, if you'll come on up, I will work on switching us over to your, here's that.
Okay, good morning, everybody. Good to see you on Saturday morning. Just a quick pulse on the room. How many people are currently transitioning to organic? A few of you. How many have recently completed their transition?
Okay. I think that works.
How many are long experienced organic farmers?
What's that?
We had a few there too.
Yes.
And we have a few folks that I recognize as maybe curious seekers. Great. Well, my name is Allison Wallend. Welcome. I work for MOSA in the capacity of the TOP Region Program Director, and we're going to talk about TOP today. So the things we'll cover in the next half hour or so, I'd like to do a little stage setting and connect the dots, how we got here and what TOP is going to do. We'll talk about our regions that were defined by the NLP. Review a few of our core partners here in the Midwest, and then spend a fair amount of time talking about the priorities for TOP, and then look a little bit at our work plan here in the Midwest and how you all can get involved, and then I'd love to entertain any questions, like lots of questions. All right, so we'll start back in 2020. We all are probably a little bit tired of hearing about the COVID-19 pandemic, but we also often talk about the COVID-19 pandemic in its negative attributes to what it did. But I want to spin that a little bit and talk about one of the things that it did that's actually positive for organic agriculture in particular, and that is really that it shone the light on and put a magnifying glass on some of the issues that we have in our food production system. So it really bore to mind there are bottlenecks happening, and the industrial agriculture that has started back in the late 1800s, early 1900s, has really changed and created some challenges for getting food to all of us. So from that, then, we have this new lens of an awareness, really, of some of the challenges facing food production. And then President Biden signed into act the American Rescue Plan, which put many, many, many millions of dollars towards bolstering our economy in lots of different spaces. And in June of 2022, Secretary Vilsack of the USDA announced the Food Transformation Systems Bill. And to that, there's a $2 billion effort for things like the Organic Transition Initiative, Climate Smart Farming, and many other initiatives that we'd be here all day. And then just a little bit later last summer, in August of 2022, the Organic Transition Initiative was initially announced. To that, it is a program for wraparound support of transitioning to organic farmers, recognizing the cultural and technical and economic challenges that are presented during the transitioning period. So there's our landscape. So the Organic Transition Initiative has three main legs. The three main legs are the $100 million awarded to the NRCS for technical assistance, $100 million to the American to AMS for market-to-market, pinpointed market access, and then $100 million to TOP. We'll talk a little bit about each of those and a lot about TOP. All right, so that direct farmer assistance, so that's $75 million for to develop new organic management conservation practices through technical assistance, and another $25 million to the risk management agency for transitional organic assistance payments, and those will be direct payments to farmers, as I understand it. And then we've got our pinpointed market access. So this is all about developing markets and addressing the bottleneck issue. There are specific commodities identified through this work, but I think being a little bit creative with the program, TOP will also work on this in terms of, I know I'm looking for Terry. So here in the Midwest, we have a lot of elderberry growers in Missouri, and we have some issues with production and handling there. So I think that TOP will work with that, for example. All right. And then the transitioning to organic partnership program, of course. Again, $100 million for wraparound support to transitioning producers. So the TOP initiatives have three main goals. That's increase the number of acres transitioning to organic, provide greater support to producers during those transitional years. So we know that it's the transition period for land is 36 months from the last day or from the day after the last application of a prohibitive substance. But we also recognize that just because that three-year period has happened, the learning curve is still steep and transition is really still occurring, even though you may have your organic certificate. So we're looking at support beyond the actual award of your certificate. And then increasing outreach and engagement to historically underserved groups. So around here, that will be a lot of tribal nations that be our friends in the Amish community, urban agriculture, folks that have traditionally not received the same amount of resources. Okay, so the TOP region, let's look at those a little bit. We've got a few folks in the room. So before I dive too far into the region, I want to acknowledge I'm gonna back up. So we do have six regions throughout the United States. You can see those as colored on the map. I won't name each of the regions. But I do want to speak a little bit to how those regions were developed. And those regions were chosen by the National Organic Program by really looking at states that are well represented in the organic industry and partnering them with states that have a lot of opportunity for growth. So let's look specifically at the Midwest. I always joke I'm a born and bred Midwesterner myself. And it's not very often that I think of Tennessee or Kentucky as part of the Midwest region. But here in Minnesota and Wisconsin and Iowa particularly, we have strong representation of the organic industry, and those states need our help. So we're here, we're going to provide our friends in Arkansas and Tennessee and Kentucky and all of the states. Some extra support to help them grow their markets. There's lots of opportunity for growth there. Within each of the regions, there's one organization or six organizations named to lead the effort. It is an iterative and a collaborative project. So it's not just the one organization. Those organizations were identified as nonprofit organic certifying bodies who represent the largest amount of certified farms in the region. So for the Midwest, MOSA fits that bill. In the Plains States, we have OCIA as the lead organization. Angie, if you want to raise your hand. And then Oregon Tilth in the Northwest. Margaret, nice to meet you in person. CCOF in California in the Southwest, Florida Organic Growers in the Southeast, and Pennsylvania Certified Organic in the Northeast. We've been challenged by the NOP. As I said, this is a collaborative and iterative process, and we've been challenged by the NOP that we would have 20 partners over the course of the five-year program. Here in the Midwest, we have relationships established with about 15 core partners already. So I see no issue with us meeting 20. In fact, I would think that each of those 15 will have another factor of 15 to 20 partners working with them. So we'll very easily be in the space of probably closer to 300 partners over the 5 years. So to that end, here are some of our partners. I see a few of you folks here. So Marble Seed is here, of course. They're sponsoring our conference, and O-Farm is represented. Who am I missing? Iowa Organic Association. Hi, Cassie. You know, this Zoom culture is so interesting to, you know, see people in person for the first time. Great. So any of those folks can answer questions about our transitioning to organic partnership program, and they are also responsible for helping and contributing to the heavy lift of program planning. Okay, so the five initiatives of the Transitioning to Organic Partnership Program are farmer-to-farmer mentorship, technical assistance, community building, workforce development, and data and reporting. So I always start sometimes I don't talk to the slide, sorry. We'll go to the next slide. So farmer-to-farmer mentoring. Farmer-to-farmer mentoring is the first priority identified for the work. It will be, we anticipate rolling out farmer-to-farmer mentoring, a soft rollout through the summer of 2023 with an official program launch this fall. It is a paid mentorship program, and we are seeking both mentors, experienced farmers, and transitioning farmers that would like to work with a mentor. The pairing will be based around commodity and geographic location. Let's see. On the last slide, I have a QR code. You can take a picture of it, and it will take you to my email. You can email me directly or any of those folks that raised their hands in the room. So Marble Seed or even OCIA, if you're in their region, though, if you're not and you reach out to them, I'm sure they'll get information back to me. Minnesota Department of Ag, any of our partners will be able to help you. Are there many resources for TOP in Iowa? Yeah, you know, Marble Seed is a small staff, and they've been in the thrust of event planning. So I'm sure that they've gotten your message and would be in touch soon. I will say I'm going to diverge for just a second. I didn't speak about money. The program is, the Midwest was awarded $13.6 million of the $100 million over a five-year period. So our responsibility as the core partners is stewarding that money and allocating it across the 11 state region. Some of that money, the first spend, will be towards the mentorship program. Great questions. Anybody else?
I'll just mention, Allison, that at the booth, we have the map available live, so you can actually click on the contact information for each organization state by state. So stop by the USDA booth, and we can help you out as well.
Great. So I'm just going to reiterate what you said. So at the NOP booth, there is a map online of the United States. It's interactive. And when you click into the map, you will get a link to the partner organizations in your state. That map is evolving on a regular basis. So if you don't see an organization close to you, you know, let us know. We don't know every organization out there, but we will be adding to that map also. Anyway, click into the map, and then you'll be able to get contact information for close to you. Great. I'll just pause and ask, does anybody else have any other questions right now? Perfect. Okay, so technical assistance. So I think of technical assistance and having worked in the organic industry for quite a long time that I actually don't believe there is a shortage of technical assistance. I think what there's a shortage of is access and affordability. So it's difficult for a beginning farmer to get off the farm for a day or 2 days to attend a conference. Or maybe broadband isn't available in your rural area. So accessing the resources online isn't an option. So when I think of technical assistance under TOP, I really think of access and affordability. So we will be working across the 11-state region to increase that. You will see things like field days and technical assistance, and we're working collaboratively with our other five regions to develop a TOP-specific website that will have a general page with all of the program information and then specific resources for each region. I also think I want to speak to this, what TA do you need? You know, we in the industry can identify where we think we need to develop TA, but really what's most useful is for us to hear from you. Where do you need support? Do you need extra support in writing your organic system plan or completing your organic system plan? Or do you need support in identifying your markets and business planning? Or do you need help with your soil fertility and identifying what kind of buffer you need to put in? So anyway, we want you all to drive what the technical assistance needs are. Okay, community building. We all know that we learn best from each other and those that are like ourselves. And we also recognize that farming can be a really insular and sometimes lonely career choice. So we feel that building community is really beneficial in terms of everything from creating resources for you to be able to ask and learn from each other, but also in terms of providing some mental health support and, you know, that person that you just need to bend their ear a little bit or learn, and really, again, learning from each other. So we'll see this through some, I would expect some support to conference attendance, roundtables, farm field days. Again, we are developing our programming right now, so these are what we're thinking of at this point. And then workforce development. So as has been noted, there is a bottleneck to the organic industry, and that one of those is in the inspection and review and the length of time that it takes to become, to go through that certification process. And some of that is, like in many different areas of the economy, we are, you know, struggling with our workforce. So we're looking at how do we build workforce capacity? How do we make education for those skill sets more available and affordable? So availability and affordability, access again. And how do we increase that? How do we increase our pool of applicants, really? The other thing is that really looking at people who are interested in agriculture, that this would provide a reasonable living wage and entry into a really exciting career. So this is both in private sector, I would say anything from a grain salesperson to an organic inspector to extension to entry into the National Organic Program. All right, and data and reporting. So for all of my data people out there, one of my favorite spots. So the National Organic Program did identify a series of metrics that the program will meet. And of course, we will collect and share that information with them in hopes that that will not only, just as a verification system should, verify that we're doing what we said we would do through the program, but also help to inform future programming needs from the USDA. All right, so looking at our work plan in the Midwest, so if we think back to that early slide on the timeline, the Organic Transition Initiative was launched in August of 2022. About November 1st of 2022, we started moving forward with program planning and implementation. So it's been a very fast and flurry of a few months. So I really think of the work that we've been doing here in three buckets. We've first been working on the program infrastructure. So how do we get money out to our partners? How do we communicate? What does that look like? And building the program plans and the partner plans to support all of the initiatives of TOP. We've been working on partner development. This has been a lot of outreach, some conference attendance, meeting people one-to-one, meeting a lot of Zoom meetings, and talking about what their partnership with TOP might look like. And then lastly, the third bucket at this moment has been a focus on farmer mentoring, like I said, with launching the program and perhaps a soft rollout over the summer with a more robust rollout in the fall. I will just say very openly with my NOP friends in the room, they had asked that we launch farmer mentoring. This is why it started early on in the spring. And the leads did gather, and we pushed back on that at that goal a little bit just because we felt we needed a little more time for planning and launching a mentorship program as we're entering production season. We just didn't feel that that would necessarily be a viable long-term strategy for the program. So we are working towards farmer mentoring aggressively. So how can TOP help you? We talked a lot about the program and where it's going here in the Midwest. But if you are in the process of transitioning your operation, there is an opportunity to be engaged as a mentee with an experienced organic farmer. There will be opportunities to learn at our community building events and support and also technical assistance coming your way. If you're interested in helping another organic producer, we'd love to hear from you. We are looking for mentors here in the Midwest. We do have a fairly aggressive goal. We're hoping to have 220 mentor pairs in the Midwest each year for the next 5 years. So, of course, that's over the 11-state region. And do you currently host educational events on your farm? Would you be interested in hosting more events specific to the transitioning audience? And lastly, would you like to support the work that's happening in the Midwest? Are you at an organization or do you represent an organization that you think would align well with this work and would like to be a partner? So we're looking for technical assistance partners, groups that would be able to help identify mentors and mentees and community building. All right, so that is the rundown of the Transitioning to Organic Partnership program here in the Midwest as it stands today. And if I were to be here next Saturday, I'd have a probably a different set of slides because it is evolving so quickly.
Money that the NOP is giving you for the program, does it have to be distributed?
distributed within a certain time frame?
That's a great question. So the question was whether or not there's a deadline for spending the money. The Transitioning to Organic Partnership Program is a 5-year cooperative agreement, and that date started ticking in, I don't know, right around November 1st. So the deadline would be, you know, October 31st of 2027. It is a wonderful amount of money put towards the organic industry and specifically towards recognizing the needs of transitioning to organic farmers. And I will also say I think that we will be able to spend that money. Yes, sir. That's a great question. So the question again was, if we have specific needs and we know how to answer some of these questions, how do we share that information, right? Did I summarize that correctly? Yep. So that QR code or my email address, either one of those would be a great place to start. And I identified, I think you said you were from Iowa. And our friend from Iowa Organic Association, she would be a great place to start. And I know they have a booth downstairs. We would love to hear what you think your barriers are, or not even what you think, but what are their barriers to you. So we know from research what some of the barriers to organic are, what the, you know, cost, lack of market. But what I'm asking are some of those things that we don't think of regularly? That you know that. Yes, sir. Right. So the question is, are we looking to work with consultants to help find mentors? The way that I would like to answer that right now.
Not to find, but if say you have someone you can't pair up as a mentor.
Could a consultant be a mentor? Okay. So my misunderstanding, I'm going to restate your question just so everybody can hear it. So what the question is if we have a hard time finding a mentor in a particular area, would we entertain using a consultant as a mentor? Correct? So I'm going to back up just a step, and then I'm going to come back to answer your question. And I'm going to back up by saying one of the ways in which I have gone about building partnerships in the Midwest is an acknowledgement of that people coming from different types of backgrounds make a stronger team. So we have certifiers at the table, we have nonprofits at the table, we have universities at the table. And I've also spoken with some consultants that will be working further downstream, particular to technical assistance delivery. In regards to your specific question, mentors, there will be an intake process for both mentors and mentees, you know, an application, if you will. I'm not going to say no, we wouldn't consider a consultant as a mentor, but it would depend on the needs of the mentee. So, you know, really the intent behind the mentorship program is that it's a farmer-to-farmer mentor. But, you know, there might be a need in that mentorship relationship that does not preclude, you know, from considering that. So, How's that for a non-answer?
I can speak a little bit to that. We knew SOE was in the works. It's, we've all known for about 5 years that we've been working on it. So we didn't wait till now to start working on the technology part. We've actually been testing that with volunteers for the past nine or 10 months. We expect that later this year, probably in the fall, there'll be a more robust rollout of the technology to anybody that is interested. In the meantime, we will be starting to do webinars and adding additional fact sheets and information on the SOE webpage on the website. If you will come by our, sorry, I was told not to stand in front of the speaker when we're mic'd, so that's why I keep moving over. If you come by the booth, we have a QR code that'll take you right there, and then it's easier to save because, as you know, URLs can be crazy long. So we try to make it easy by doing that at the booth, and we can answer more questions about SOE there as well. USDA, and we are... closest from the front doors. As you're walking in, we're right there on the left. So I'll see if I can, I'm remembering to restate the question or try. How will SOE work as far at, from the farmer perspective? Who will be helping you meet those additional requirements or changes needed in your OSP and processes? Is that a fair statement? Yes. Yes. We are working with the certifiers. We started training with certifiers on SOE literally the week that SOE came out as a final rule. And we'll continue to provide training to them so that they can work with you because there are changes to the OSP requirements, very specific changes, changes to the way certificates are going to be handled. And so, yes, we will be holding them responsible for working with their operations and providing technical assistance to comply. In the back.
I think that's a great need that you just identified in terms of our developing technical assistance support under the program.
Another thing that NOP is doing, we believe in the many hands idea that there are only 83 of us, so we can't be doing one-on-one consultations effectively.
There are 75 certifiers with several thousand inspectors, but they also can't meet that need in the way that it needs to be met. So we are working within USDA. We recognize there's already an existing network of technical experts in other agencies in your counties. And a lot of them don't know much about the organic systems. So we are working very hard to expand training of extension agents, NRCS agents in the field, FSA, so that when you go to them with questions, they won't just know about their programs, but they'll understand how those programs support and fit into the organic system. That's an ongoing project to improve those. In particular, marble seed is it all right to mention? There's been an experiment with NRCS out in Oregon for a number of years, working more aggressively with extension by bringing in an outside expert as a partner, and marble seed is now doing that same thing here in Wisconsin. That program I hope to see expand exponentially in states where organic is important, because it is that connection with extension that I think can have the most immediate impact on y'all's ability to find that kind of on-farm technical assistance. Is that fair enough? Okay. You want to
go ahead. That will be through as I understand it, that is the purview of each regional center.
Repeat the question.
Oh, I'm sorry. the question was, whose purview is it to approve that a farm-hosted event is endorsed by TOP? And that will be the purview of each regional center. So, you know, and I've really tried to be collaborative in our center in the Midwest, and so I don't want to say that that's my decision. You can bring it to me, but it will be the decision that our core partners will weigh and make that decision through our programming of technical assistance. So I also want to say technical assistance to me, you know, having been deep in this the last couple weeks in particular, technical assistance can very quickly get a little unwieldy and have a quite a bit of scope creep. And so I'm really cognizant of identifying what the technical assistance is and then how we can provide that across an 11-state region in a consistent manner. So that to me is one of our tallest marching orders right now. We have a lot of freedom to make decisions within each regional center. Yes, ma'am.
So to follow up on your NRCS training question, so
No, this is in addition to TOP. It's a separate thing. And I hope that we're building a system based on that model that can is sustainable indefinitely, that it's not just something that will be for the next 5 years, that this is a long-term internal USDA change in the way that we provide education. It may, the model may adapt over time because it does cost money, which has to come from somewhere and take away from some other program. Right now, we're very fortunate that there is so much money available for this five-year period. My hope is that we will take a long view and be looking for ways to make these things indefinitely sustainable. We have a gentleman that's been very, very patient, and then we'll come to you, if that's all right.
Yeah, I guess I have two questions. So the first question is, starting off with a comment, I do think you're onto something with outsourcing the technical assistance aspect of things to extension. So I'm really interested to hear what Marlison is doing with UW.
Let's do the first one because I have a short attention span. So how can extension agents, how can we more quickly involve more extension agents?
Yeah, how do we get involved?
And that's a wonderful question. I'm so happy you're here. I'd love to talk to you afterwards too. So extension is a huge complicated organization, partially funded by USDA, partially by states, and they're given the agents are given monumental tasks to know everything. So from that perspective, they're always underfunded and they're always overworked. So we are looking for ways, creative ways, to not add to that burden, but simplify through providing materials that might be useful. For instance, we did, and I heard the number again last night, the number of different programs within USDA that can support an organic operation is something like 76 across the department. It is so hard to find all of those and collect the information in one place. We're working on web-based tools that can be dynamic and change from year to year, but some of the information that you need is what are the deadlines, who's eligible, all those kinds of things. Keeping up with that is a huge task, and we are working on it. One step is that we received an invitation to speak to the HBCU 1890s Extension Service Regional Conference last summer, and it was an experiment. We sent two staff down there and met with them, and we had an hour to do a presentation. At the end, it was amazing how many extension agents came up and said, "I had no idea." So we are now building that capability to send people out anytime we're invited. So if there are gatherings or opportunities, whether it's online or in face-to-face, help us learn what those are. And we're working with that group to find out who their partners are within the extension community so that we can get our people out more for training, to provide that training. Okay, and then second question.
Yeah.
The question is there direct funds through TOP available to transitioning farmers? I'm going to say at this time, no. Not through TOP, but through the NRCS $100 million, as I understand it, there will be funding, some funding available that's being developed.
Right. That program is still in development, so we don't know exactly what it's going to look like, but the intent is that is direct payments to farmers in some way. And then there are other programs outside of TOP, or the Organic Transition Initiative, like the dairy. There are two different dairy programs currently targeting organic dairy, specifically to provide direct assistance to farmers. And I don't know the details of those, but we could connect anybody interested with the right people at USDA.
The mentors will be vetted on the attributes on which they'll be vetted. We have recently put forward through the six regional leads for, we reached agreement and then put those forward to the NOP for final review. How that actually comes down is yet to be determined. I will add that we are super fortunate here in the Midwest to be working with Marble Seed, and OFA and OAK and OFARM all have longstanding established, and OCIA in the Plains all have longstanding established mentorship programs that we are leaning very heavily on their expertise in that area to implement mentorship here in the Midwest.
Yeah. And someone needs to help transitioning guys navigate this stuff because there's a lot of opportunity. Just an example, my first field I transitioned, I did not do any, I didn't know of any of the programs. Tens of thousands of dollars opportunity lost in potential funding to help with transition. My second one, I think I learned about it, and I was the first one in my county to go, well, in our region, it's like a three-county region for, you know, my NRCS guy. He'd never heard of it.
Yep.
And so I had to have someone else come, and we kind of we figured it out and got through it. But again, that website, and then just finding a way to educate your transitioning guys on all the opportunities available, because, you know, that's a little, I feel good that at least I found out halfway after my second parcel, but, you know, you think, well, lost opportunity, right? And I hate to see other people struggle through it so much when maybe there are opportunities they're missing. And if I miss it, I'm sure there are a lot of people missing these things. So. Illinois. Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I had a Moses mentor. I had, you know, I was working with Moses as a certifier. I mean, when I talked to my FSA person, they said, we have one guy in our county you probably could talk to about this. He was already an experienced farmer, but it's a county with like fewer than five certified organic farmers.
Well,
So you have a resource, so now we need to figure out a way for them to plug it into their technical assistance side and get it out to these transitioning people, right, to make sure they know about it.
Yeah. You at USDA, we're very aware this is a problem, that there's so many programs. And, you know, the one we haven't even mentioned is rural development. And rural development is trained to think of that they're looking for businesses and the community support, but every farm is also a business. So farms are eligible for a lot of what rural development does in the value-added producer grants, in small business development grants, REAP, the thank you. I used to work for rural development and I can't even remember all of our acronyms. But it's energy efficiency and solar power and things like that, which includes grain dryers. There's a lot of money out there. And so the thing that we're trying right now is instead of having it on a whole bunch of different agency level websites, the department, the secretary has actually said he wants a department level page, which then means the secretary's office is looking to make sure they're taking complaints if there's a broken link. They're noticing if there are problems, which then motivates agencies to keep this up to date. It's an ongoing project, and if there's ever anything that's missing, you can get my email address or anybody from at the booths and let us know. We want to improve the resources that then will feed into TOP and make it easier for them so they're not spending time trying to do those things that we need to be doing.
I just want to tag in and say thank you for your comment. You made exactly my point of access and affordability.
Yeah.
So. Like, I had all the production stuff, but like the financing side, fortunately, we're in a good position as a farm business, and we made it through that, you know. But yeah, it's a big hurdle, especially for the small guys. They could use the money more than I could, honestly. So they just need to know it's there.
One interesting challenge with organic that I hadn't really paid a lot of attention to until somebody at the OFARM meeting was talking about it. Most of the other programs within USDA focus on one commodity or one crop, and organic covers everything. So that's a whole nother layer of complexity for you when you're trying to navigate all of the resources. So recognizing that, we will continue our efforts through the existing resources, those networks, whether it's rural development, making sure rural development knows that an organic farm is also a business that should be eligible for a VAPG or a REAP or whatever, to FSA, to continuing our partnerships with FSA and NRCS in particular. I think, did you open the door because we're near time or? Okay. Uh-oh. Okay, so more questions? No? And we are going to be here the rest of the day as well, and we would love to hear from you, even after this day.